This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by the brilliant CEO and founder of LeanTOS, Mohan Giridharadas. Mohan's going to tell us about LeanTOS and also talk about founding a company, advice on leadership, and a lot more. Mohan was a former partner and leader at McKinsey and a brilliant founder. Mohan, let me turn it to you. Tell us a little bit about your background and about LeanTOS. Then we'll talk about leadership and what it's like to found a company and any advice for founders and leaders.
All right, I'll give it a shot, Scott. My background is in was in computer science. I was a software engineer at Intel and then mentor. Left all that to go to business school at Stanford and then joined McKinsey. Ended up spending 18 years at McKinsey, 13 of them as a partner, and I ran the lean manufacturing and lean service operations practice in North America, and also the lean operations practice, manufacturing plus service operations, for all of Asia Pacific. And at the end of 2009, I decided to leave and start LeanTOS because there were two ideas that stuck in my head that made it feel like it was worthy of quitting a nice job at McKinsey and starting a company. Idea one was everywhere where I saw process improvement and operational improvement taking place, they were being done on the backs of Excel spreadsheets. And it occurred to me that Excel is middle school math, and middle school math gives you middle school answers, and operational problems are more complicated than that. So that was thing one. And thing two was process improvement efforts seem to require a project team, whether it was an internal consulting team or an external consulting team. And it occurred to me that project teams have a day job. They have a project job. They don't have a day job. So they have the luxury of time to be able to chase project statistics and metrics and syndication and Gantt charts and to-do lists and so on. And once that project team wrapped up, the stuff fell by the wayside. And so my vision of LeanTOS was, imagine being able to deliver a lean transformation, replacing the Excel level math with sophisticated math, optimization, simulation, machine learning, AI, et cetera, and replacing the need for a on-the-ground project team with a software as a service platform that could deliver the right analytics, whisper the right advice into the right ear at the right time automatically at scale. Hence LeanTOS, so lean transformation as a service. So that was the idea around which LeanTOS launched.
And so let me ask you a couple questions. I'm going to start with questions about McKinsey's, if not the highest regarded consulting firm in the world, it's right there. Very few people leave a place like McKinsey after 18 years to found their own company. I do want to spend a moment there. Then I also want to spend a moment on whether you overlapped with Andrew Grove at Intel, one of the famous also founders of our time. Take me through, very few people, you know, one of the magnificent leaders of another company called Akasa left Andreessen Horowitz to found Akasa. You know, so some people would say, no one leaves McKinsey, no one leaves Andreessen Horowitz. How do you find the motivation to leave and start what's become, you know, a brilliant and highly successful company, but it's a high-risk proposition to go from a career at McKinsey, the best of the best, to start your own thing? Talk about the motivation there, the energy, scared, not scared, confident. How did you sort of view that? And then I'd love to talk about whether you overlapped at all with Andrew Grove. Sure. And what that was like.
Not scared, terrified. But you're right. McKinsey is an absolutely incredible place. And I owe everything I've learned from a professional leadership and professional problem solving and just general business manager know-how to the time I spent at McKinsey. So it was certainly a remarkable place to be, and I feel privileged to have gotten in there and then done well enough to stay there for as long as I did. But my original intent had always been to go to business school and be at McKinsey for 2 or 3 years and leave to start a company. And the 2 or 3 became 18. So I was, as I was approaching the 18-year point, I just was reflected and said, sure, I could do this for another 10 years and then just retire, and I'll always regret not having tried. And so the motivation was to try, and it's obviously difficult to walk away from the nice salary of a senior partner to a salary of zero. When you start a company, there's no co-founders, no no venture funding, no product, no technology, no nothing, and your salary is zero. And so it was certainly scary, but the idea was I'd give it a shot, and if in 1 or 2 years I didn't get traction, I'd just go back and get a job somewhere. Maybe not at McKinsey, but I'd have got a job somewhere. So I managed to bound the risk by saying that I'd done well enough that living without a salary for 2 years was not the scariest thing in the world. And I put a time clock on it, which then changed the nature of the company you're going to build. Because if you've got a tight time box like that, you can't think of a company that's going to be an infrastructure company or a platform company, because those take 10 years to get off the ground. And so I knew it had to be an application-specific company that solved a specific operational problem where we could get traction quickly. So that was the motivation to leave. And yes, I overlapped with Andy Grove, but Andy Grove wouldn't know I overlapped with him. I was a first-year engineer, and he was the CEO of all of Intel. But yes, when I joined Intel, Andy Grove was running the place.
And talk about sort of, Andy Grove had this, you know, brilliant drive and only the paranoid survive mindset and so forth. Talk about, as a founder, what parts of that mindset resonate with you, and what other advice or thinking you would give to other founders?
Right. So I didn't experience Andy Grove's leadership directly, just because I was junior. I was never in a room with him, so I can't claim to have any firsthand experience around that. I think as an initial founder, the team you build around you in the beginning matters a lot. You need to build a very strong leadership team that is very collaborative, that is aligned around the mission, and is willing to do whatever it takes to succeed. And they put their teams ahead of themselves when they're getting going. So the nature and composition and the chemistry of the initial leadership team you build sets the stage for a lot of things. And we are very fortunate. We built an incredibly strong leadership team, and it's very collaborative, and I think that helps us a lot. So being ultra selective on that part, and then investing the time and effort in the relationship and in the path matters, and it pays off in a very big way. The second thing is, I think until you get product market fit, there's really no point in chasing all the other soft things of let's build a culture and let's do this and let's do that. Because absent product market fit, the company is a dead man walking company. It's just, it doesn't matter whether you throw more and more money at it. At some point, it'll run out. And so being obsessed about solving a real problem that real customers want to buy and will buy repeatedly has got to be kind of job one. And until you get that, there's no point building anything else. You don't have a foundation from which to build a company. And so in that sense, we were lucky as well, because the first product we picked, the infusion optimization, we cracked a really difficult problem and cracked it in a compelling way, and it was scalable. And so we got lift off on that relatively quickly. And it was easy for us to then, you know, mobilize around it. So I think those are the two things I pay a lot of attention to in the beginning.
Both the team you build and product market fit. And talk about product market fit, because it seems like there's so much discussion in, you know, Silicon Valley and other places about money being thrown at founders and founders trying to figure out how to put that money to work, but not yet really cracking that particular problem, which is the real reason for being, is what is your product market fit? Talk about some of your observations there, or any thoughts you have there about how important it is to be so close to your customers that you really understand what they want and what you could commercialize, what they actually will buy, where that Venn diagram fits together.
Right. I think more companies collapse from too much money than too little money. There's something beautiful about too little money that focuses the mind on survival and really, really solving a problem that matters, as opposed to a nice to have. Lots of people use similar nomenclature, and we use it in the company. You need to be solving a painkiller problem, not a vitamin problem. And so if it's a nice to have for a customer that, yeah, it's another nice little analytic, or it's a nice little feature function that they can use, then it's not really product market fit. You have to solve for a problem that's really, really hard. And without your solution, their lives get much, much worse, to where they will scream if you took it away from them at some point. So you've got to find product market fit of that nature. And the way we did it is, we embedded with our first few customers. Stanford was the first customer where we solved the infusion problem. And our team would sit with them every single day for weeks and months until we really understood how the nurses think about it, how the scheduler thinks about it, how the person running the shift operations and infusion thinks about it, how the overall oncology leader thinks about it. So we needed to get a 360-degree view of the problem, the pain point, how we solve it, and why their lives are better as a result of our product. And when you get that in a very solid way, then you've solved a problem in a compelling manner. Then the trick becomes, how do we deliver it scalably so that we can sell it to strangers? That's the other thing that startup companies struggle with, because in the beginning, they sell to four or five friends. A friend of a friend knows somebody at a particular customer, and they agree to buy it. We pay a lot of attention to when we start selling to strangers. Somebody we didn't know, didn't get introduced to, saw the product, heard about the product, took a demo, and then bought it. That's a sign of having a cheap product market fit, where a stranger is buying it from you and it's not somebody who feels obliged to give you a shot. And that's, once you get that going, then it's easier to mobilize the rest of the company around scaling that product market fit, building a go-to-market engine so you can reach more people, et cetera. But everything starts with getting product market fit right.
It's a fascinating perspective. There's two or three things that are just so fascinating. One is so close to customers that you really understand what they need. Not a vitamin, not a supplement, but something that truly solves a real problem. You call it a painkiller or a pain stopper versus a supplement. The second thing you said was so many healthcare companies have been built as sort of captives of a big health system. And that captive has the big health system as a customer. But they can never really get past that because they're really, really built to sell to third parties that they don't have a relationship with. And there's a huge difference in how good you are at what you do is whether you could sell to strangers, as you say, or to new customers that don't have a financial relationship, don't have a need to buy from you, but really want to, versus so many of these captives of big health systems ended up being, you know, they couldn't really commercialize beyond that, even though they planned to, because they weren't that good. They weren't really solving a problem at a different level. It's a fascinating perspective. Take one moment. You spent time, I know I won't mention Intel and Andy Grove again. It was more, I knew you didn't work close with Andy Grove, but more the culture of it. And we don't have to talk about that. But between Stanford, Intel, McKinsey, building what you've own built, are there business authors, business thinkers that you particularly sort of, that particularly resonate with you, or that you go back to over time? You know, for some people of my generation, it was the Peter Druckers of the world, it was the Jim Collins of the world. Are there particular thought leaders, Clayton Christensen, whoever they might be, recent or new or old, that particularly resonated with you that were helpful to sort of how you built your thoughts on strategy and business?
I was fortunate at McKinsey that I spent time in many different offices. I spent time in Cleveland, in Atlanta, in Sydney, in Singapore, back to Atlanta, and then the LA office. So I experienced five or six different McKinsey offices with different McKinsey partners leading the office. And from them, there are many, many who were mentors of mine, whom I looked up to, whom I learned a lot from. And the biggest lesson that I think has continued, two biggest lessons that have shaped kind of how I think about building the culture in the company. And I would, you know, I think we've managed to live up to that even within LeanTas, is one, this notion of collaboration. We place a very high value on collaboration at all levels of the company, the executive team, the leadership team, and up and down the entire organization. And our saying within the company is, winning soccer teams, you'll never find somebody tackling their teammate. You just do not tackle your teammates. And so we've got a very high spirit of collaboration. Now, it's important that collaboration doesn't mean just getting along and not disagreeing. We disagree plenty. We disagree strongly. We disagree forcefully. We fight over ideas. We fight over approaches. But it's always being hard on the problem and not on the person, and not trying to backstab or undercut or, you know, pull the rug out from under a colleague's feet. And so we've got a very, very highly collaborative company, but one that challenges each other. And I learned that at McKinsey. I've watched partner teams that were particularly collaborative and the kinds of things we could take on. And so that's a mission that I, you know, have paid a lot of attention to making sure lives on at LeanTest as well. The second big thing I learned from the partners I looked up to at McKinsey a lot was a genuine client comes first mindset. It's easy to say the client comes first, but a notion that you put their interests ahead of your own, their economic interests ahead of your own economic interests, and do it sincerely, genuinely, and without hesitation. And we do that. For us, we certainly say our customers come first. If we find something going wrong in an implementation, we will call them and stop the invoicing. And more often than not, they haven't even figured out something's going wrong. We've honestly found out and said, we don't feel right taking your money because this thing is wobbling right now. So give us some time to sort it out. And when it sorts out, we will restart the invoicing, but we don't feel right billing you for it. The level of trust you build when things like that happen, where customers turn around and say, these guys are watching out for us. They truly put our interests ahead of them. In healthcare, because everyone in healthcare is putting the patient's need ahead of their own, this resonates a lot with healthcare, that we are an organization that genuinely will put the economic interests of our customers ahead of our own.
Thank you very much. Again, collaboration and client comes first, client service, client comes first, and just a high level of don't tackle your own. Never tackle your own. High focus on teams and collaboration. Mohan, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. For me, it's always inspirational and insightful to learn from Mohan, CEO, founder of LeanTest, Mohan Giridharadas. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure talking with you. Take care.